This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at www.tsn1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, rather NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus gets us on and off the air. Obviously, we are going to be keeping you fully abreast of any further developments related to the tragedy that unfolded earlier today in Ottawa. The Prime Minister, if he speaks in the next 2 hours, we will bring it to you live here on TSN 1290. It's a hell of a day, guys. I mean, I was at work. I mean, you guys make fun of me more than once about it, and that, you know, I used to live in Ottawa and I used to work on Parliament Hill. Mm-hmm. So this does, you walk that route to work every day for three and a half years. You go into that building with really, you know, relatively unfettered access. Now, I had a little more access because of my employment status there. You know, the general public has to go through some more security, but, you know, it was pretty chilling today. It was pretty chilling to see this all unfold, knowing how easy, you know, how easily it could have been done when I was there a number of years ago. And obviously, this is probably one of the most tragic days in Canadian history. I don't think I'm speaking with hyperbole when I say that.
Yeah, it's very tragic. Drew, as you mentioned, you used to live in Ottawa and work on Parliament Hill. I've only visited Parliament Hill. I actually have a lot of family in Ottawa, a lot of Ginsbergs in Ottawa there. And regardless if you've worked there or have family or friends there, it's a very sad day. And what happened, we've been watching it on TV and following it on social media. It's very sad. And, you know, our thoughts go out to the family and Nathan Cirillo. It's very sad. And, you know, we love talking hockey every Wednesday, but it's a little tough to do it with what happened in Ottawa. So, you know, we're going to keep talking about hockey, but obviously there's more to life than hockey. And, you know, we just continue to, you know, have our thoughts with the city of Ottawa.
It really puts arguments about Corsi into perspective and advanced analytics versus old school thinking and, you know, who should be the starting goaltender. You know, sort of, we always get carried away in life, and this is sort of the jolt you need to get back and really refocus your priorities.
Yeah, I mean, clearly what went on today supersedes in terms of, you know, anything that we're going to talk about in terms of actual importance. But we'll try and give you a reprieve from this reality that it is today, and we'll make it hopefully fun until Prime Minister Harper speaks, and then continue to make it fun after that.
Yeah, exactly right, Richard. Yeah, I mean, our priorities are firmly in place in that what's happened in Ottawa is priority number one, but let's maybe try and give you a little bit of a reprieve for now, and we'll talk about some good news for the Winnipeg Jets. That's been in short supply so far to start this season. Richard, this was both your and my first game to see the Jets in action, not counting the exhibition season. We were both out of town for this weekend's debacles against the Predators and the Flames. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Jets win last night. It's a 3-1 victory, but, you know, to really take anything out of the game more than the fact they played one of the worst teams we've seen here in 3 years, I think is giving them a little bit too much credit.
Yeah, you know, Drew, they won. Did they dominate? No, I don't think they did. Yeah, they did play a very poor team, and Remus and I were talking last night. You know, I read five guys off the list of the Carolina roster, and I mean, a lot of people wouldn't know who any of these guys were. So, you know, and it's really no win situation for the Jets. And I was talking about that with the voice of the Jets, Paul Edmonds. But, you know, they beat him. They beat Carolina, and they're expected to. And if they lose, well, then, you know, the whole season is over. So it's a tough position to be in. But if you're a Jets fan, you would have liked it to be a little more convincing fashion yesterday. I know they got off to a 2-0 lead, but, and I know your play changes generally when you have the lead, but the Jets are not an impressive squad right now. I mean, there's nothing out there to make you think, whoa, Lightning, Avalanche, East Coast road trip, I'm feeling very confident about their chances. I don't think you could take that from the game. And I thought one thing I noticed, and again, I was not at the Nashville and Calgary games. Apparently, I should be thankful for that. But was the atmosphere at MTS Center last night was probably as listless as I've felt that it was since the Jets returned. And I think that's a testament to the fact, this is my personal opinion, I don't know who else's opinion it'd be, that I don't think the fans are sold on this team. And I think, did you hear a Go Jets Go chant yesterday? No, there wasn't one.
Well, it's funny you mention that. I was in my seats, mm-hmm. so I wasn't in the press box. I was in my seats, and the Jets came onto the ice to start the game, mm-hmm. and I you know, the crowd cheered, and I said to Laura, my wife, I said, you know, I believe that the best description for that ovation would be lukewarm.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I think that the, you know, the phrase, we've heard the phrase, you know, a lot, the honeymoon is over. I think it is fairly apt in that we're becoming more like the, you know, more, you know, prove it, show me something.
Yes.
And I'll cheer for it as opposed to applause just for being there.
I think that's fair.
And part of that had to do with the fact that the Jets had lost their first two home games.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that had to do with the 1-5 start, the 1-4 start, I should say. And, you know, the struggle scoring goals and all of that. But this Winnipeg Jets team had to win that game. And I don't mean it's a must-win game in the sense that the Jets needed the game to make the playoffs. It was a must-win game because how poorly they had played in the previous two home games and then really the two games before that. They needed to get going here. And you look at the schedule coming up, guys, and we're going to talk about it as the show mm-hmm. progresses. Tampa Bay Friday, Colorado Sunday, and then you look at that road trip against the New York teams, the New York area teams, Rangers, Islanders, Devils, and then you've got the Chicago Blackhawks. It's not going to get much easier. So it's a must-win game yeah. for me because you know that a lot of these games are going to be hard to get the 2 points. So you put yourself in a situation where you get a couple points here, but to make this homestand really successful, you're going to have to win the next two games. And if you only win one of them, you know, you get 4 points out of a possible 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good by any stretch of the imagination, but you've managed to at least say that you've beaten a team that was very good, whether it's the Avalanche or the Lightning. I'd probably have to say at this point the Avalanche are maybe a little bit easier to beat because
right.
of the problems they've had early, but still a very good hockey team. So the fans, sure, they might have been a little bit out of it because maybe it's so desperate so early on the season. And really the Jets didn't have a hard schedule, if you think about it,
they
to start
not.
The season with the no. 5 home games and all the teams that missed the playoffs last year, talking about Calgary, talking about Nashville, both non-playoff teams last year. So, you know, it's a great victory, but you have to follow that up with some more points here.
If you don't take, I mean, it's a great victory, and then you got Tampa Bay on Friday, and we're going to talk about the Tampa Bay game coming up. You know, that's easily was the hardest of the 5 home games. And if you do something against Tampa Bay, that's where the fans will say, okay, you've maybe proven
yes.
something to me.
Right.
You're supposed to beat Carolina. Like you said, that Carolina roster had a bunch of absolute nobodies on it.
I'll tell you what the Carolina roster was. It was discouraging for Jets fans who want them to get Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel.
Because it's hard to be as worse than the Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, you've got the Staal brothers out. You've got a lot of players that were in that lineup that were Charlotte checkers. And, you know, I picked this in our season preview show. I picked the Hurricanes to finish last in the NHL. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get Connor McDavid, but they'll have a better chance than other teams at getting Connor McDavid. But absolutely, it's a team you should beat. And, you know, they did. And again, it's a baby step here for the Jets.
Enough about last night, because that was a, you know, one of 82 and the one that you had. It was the free space on the bingo card, more or less. I want to play the Paul Maurice clip from after the Calgary game. I guess this would be from Monday, the one that's been played ad nauseum throughout the media, to hear your opinions on what he had to say.
It's not the player's job to tell you about it. They'll come out half to hear and open this book up to you and tell you everything that goes on in the room. I could make you cry in that f***ing room. It's not the... listen, I understand you have to work with what you're given, and I appreciate that. But the accountability in the room is fine. We deal with our problems directly. Apologize for the profanity.
My favorite part is the apologies. Apologize for the profanity. You know, what did you think about Paul Maurice's comments, you know, after the loss to Calgary, or the day after the loss to Calgary?
I thought it was a coach who's frustrated with the situation right now. Frustrated by a lot more things than he's going to put out there. He's been in Toronto. He's not going to say much to the media. I don't think there's a problem with the question. I believe Jeff Hamilton of CBC asked the question. Jeff's been doing a nice job covering the team this year. Not that he didn't last year, but I like the work he's doing. And I think it was probably a reaction that he regrets, but an emotional reaction in any event. You know, Drew, the make you cry in the room, I assume, means that he said things to players that would have made, you know, somebody else cry because it's so critical and they're holding each other accountable. I mean, I don't know if that's actually true in terms of the accountability in the room. I'm assuming accountability in the room is an issue.
It's been an issue for the last 3 years, we think.
Yeah, you have to think so. And so I think the question is fair. But Maurice ought to be defending the room, even if it isn't something that is, you know, because he's not going to tell the media that. But again, it's a fair question, and he's allowed to answer as he wishes. And so he gets a little emotional, a little bit defensive. That's fine. He's the head coach. I'm sure he agrees with it. If you've asked him off the record, I'm sure he agrees with it. I mean, he looks like a guy. He looked 10. I mean, one thing about Paul Maurice, we asked John Forslund about this last year. John Forslund is the play-by-play man for the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolina, or South, or whatever it's called.
No, it's FS Carolina.
And he said, and I asked him, you know, or was on the show, what is Paul Maurice's biggest downfall? What was his biggest downfall as a coach? What is his biggest weakness? And John Forslund said that the biggest issue that Paul Maurice has is he's too hard on himself. He's too intense at times. He looks uptight right now. And even last night, if you watched his body language on the bench, I thought it was different than in past games, or certainly different than the end of last year when there was less pressure. So I think all these things play a factor in that reaction.
Right, Richie. And Andrew, you could ask the question, well, is Paul Maurice, you know, using this speech a little bit too early? Is he getting a little bit too upset too early? Well, if the Jets go 1-5 and they go on the road and they're 2-6, which is a possibility here, by the way, if they lose the last two games of this homestand, then, you know, it's going to be very tough to make the playoffs, knowing that after this homestand, 10 of your next 12 games are on the road, and we already talked about the first four-game road trip where you're playing four teams that could all be in the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. You could debate whether you think the Devils or the Rangers are a playoff team, but, and same thing with the Islanders. The Islanders are off to a hot start.
No better than the Jets.
So you look at what he sees in front of himself after five games.
That's right.
Because to me, the Calgary game was worse than the Nashville game. The Nashville game, you're coming off of a loss to LA where you didn't play very well against, sure, the defending Stanley Cup champions. But then you play the Calgary Flames, who, even though they have lots of good players, Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, all these guys, they're a bottom team in the Western Conference, so you had to come out and play strong, and they only did that for 20 minutes. So as far as I'm concerned, I have no problem with Paul Maurice's comments, and he's upset, and I see Richie's point. You know, is this maybe a little bit too early? And
well, I'm not even saying it's too early, Ezzy. I'm just saying that I'm not saying it's too early to react that way. I'm just saying he feels the pressure already, and probably rightfully so, to your point, that he sees what's ahead of him. And you know, the coach can't panic. They say the coach can't panic and then the team will panic, but the coach also doesn't want to not react at all because then the team doesn't react. It's a tough situation for Maurice to be in. But the biggest thing you take from Paul Maurice or the Jets this year is that Paul Maurice has a very similar roster to Claude Noel. He's still calling on Mark Stewart to play top four. He's still calling on Chris Thorburn, these guys, to play pretty significant shifts, although he didn't play much last night. And the coach can only do so much. That's what I take from it.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Joe Smith from the Tampa Bay Times to talk about the Lightning ahead of their visit on Friday. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program from the Tampa Bay Times, Joe Smith. Joe, good evening, and thanks very much for doing this.
No problem. How you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Enjoying this part of Canada at this part of the year, as opposed to in January, that's for sure.
Are you in Winnipeg already, or are you still in Alberta?
In Calgary still. They had an off day today, and then they're practicing here tomorrow before heading to Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon.
Ah, okay. Very good. Joe, we obviously brought you on to talk about the Lightning ahead of their game in Winnipeg on Friday. Former Southeast Division rivals, only see each other a couple times a year nowadays. Got to start with Steven Stamkos. Obviously, last year with the injury, this year he's off to a great start. 5 goals in his first 7 games played. You know, is this, you know, is the ceiling more than 60 goals this year at this point?
Well, it's a pretty high bar to set, but considering, you know, before his injury last year, he was playing the best hockey of his career before he broke his leg in Boston, and he didn't return back to the same kind of player he was. And so right now, entering the season, he's probably more explosive and isn't fitter than he's ever been in his career. And I think that with the guys around him, if you put Drouin up there with him, kind of playmaker type, kind of like that kind of a role that Marty St. Louis had, you could see him score some more goals. But, you know, I'm sure he'd be happy with 50 or around 60 as long as the Lightning wins the game. So, you know, I don't think you've seen the peak of Simon Stamkos yet.
We wanted to ask you about Jonathan Drouin. He got into the lineup for the first time a couple of nights ago against the Edmonton Oilers and then played his second game last night in the 2-1 win over the Calgary Flames. I saw a little bit of the game against the Flames, didn't catch most of it last night because I was at the MTS Center for the Jets game. But how have you, what's been your, I guess, synopsis on how he's played for his first two NHL games?
He's been as advertised so far. I mean, you look at the kid, and he held his own. He played almost 20 minutes last night on the top line with Stamkos and Filppula. Got his first NHL point last night and assist on the game-tying goal. Not just the playmaking, his vision is great. He handles the puck, I guess, on a string, on his stick there. And he also a pretty good compete level for a smaller player on the forecheck. So I think he's a guy that you'll still see him grow over the years. But for right now, he's been as advertised Lightning. We're hoping to see him play, and he's playing a pretty big role right now with all the injuries they have.
Joe Victor Hedman got off to a great start this year, 7 points in five games, and you know, playing big minutes for the Lightning. Of course, he gets hurt now and is out for about 4 to 6 weeks, and apparently kind of dodged a bullet there with only being out 4 to 6 weeks. Before he got injured, I mean, is he just taking the next step in his progression to become one of the top defenders in the National Hockey League?
I think he took a big step last year, to be honest, on the offensive side of the game especially, where you saw him get more comfortable in the system that John Cooper runs, where you basically allow the defenseman to kind of jump into play, and he plays the top power play unit. That's why he had over 50 points last year. And he was just kind of building off of that going into this year with the confidence he had and really developing his two-way game. And I think he was probably because he's getting some early Norris trophy consideration early on, but they're hoping to have him back as soon as they possibly can, maybe late November, early December, because he's such a huge part of this team that's really difficult to replace.
And staying on the back end, I mean, you know, the Lightning made some moves this past offseason, and one of which was signing Anton Stralman, formerly of the New York Rangers. It's gotten off to a pretty good start, obviously. You know, plus-minus can be deceiving, but a +6 playing over 22 minutes a night. It moves the puck really well. How does he fit in with the Lightning, and what do they expect from him on, you know, for the rest of this season?
You know, he's been a pretty pleasant surprise with this group. They had a number of free agents and guys in the off season, but he's a guy that really fit in well with Victor, the all Swede top pairing on defense right there. He's really calm and with the puck. He on the power play unit for second power play unit, he plays really well. He has more offensive ability than he kind of showed in New York, I think. A guy who never really panics. You see how calm he is on the ice and handling against other teams' top lines. A quiet game, but overall, I think you're going to see him, you know, kind of even take another step this year with the Lightning in this increased role that he's going to have now with Hedman out.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times talking about the Lightning. Joe, sticking on the back end, the other offseason addition to shore up the defense was Jason Garrison, came over in a trade from Vancouver. How has he looked returning to Florida after his time with the Panthers?
Yeah, certainly. It was a shock for him to leave his hometown Canucks and come to Tampa, who really went after him hard in free agency a couple of years ago when he signed with Vancouver. But they like him so far in that second pairing right now. He's not really a huge offensive threat other than his, you know, heavy shot that he has from the blue line there. But just a really reliable guy, a guy who's in position most all the time, can play 20 minutes a game. He can play on the penalty kill. Overall, he's been one of those guys that's been pretty solid in the first seven games or so, and they're needing to have more from him as the other guys take more minutes with Victor out of the lineup.
Joe, we already talked to you about Victor Hedman. We know he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. We wanted to ask you about a couple of other players that are injured, both forwards. Of course, Alex Killorn was injured right before that Edmonton game, and that's why Jonathan Drouin got into the lineup. As far as Alex Killorn goes and as far as Ryan Callahan goes, what's the latest injury update on those guys?
Well, they're both still on the trip here with the team. They described Killorn as day-to-day, and if you saw him crash into the boards on Monday's morning skate, a pretty serious, scary sight, which is a pretty positive thing for the Lightning that he actually is only day-to-day versus what could have been there. So they're saying he's not too far away. Callahan might be a little bit longer. Koosh Cooper said yesterday he was week-to-week, but it could be less depending on how he recovers there, like a lower body injury. So I'm guessing you won't see those guys on the rest of this road trip, at least. So they'll have to play with some of the guys that they have right now.
Hey, Joe, you look at this, move to the back end for a second again. You look at this back end, we've mentioned, you know, most of the guys that this team's relying on. Victor Hedman's kind of that two-way guy. Some of the other guys on the team are, you know, can be strong two-way guys, but can maybe provide more offense than defense at times. Do the Lightning have a concern at all that they're maybe a little bit too offensively oriented on the back end, and when it comes down to playing against, you know, bigger teams like, say, Boston down the stretch or in the playoffs, they might have some issue defending, especially along their own boards?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's on defense, other than, you know, Hedman and Strawman has showed some more offensive ability, but he's mostly a stay-at-home guy for the most part, and so is Garrison for the most part. So they're, and once Gudas is healthy, they need him back in there. He's hard to play against, so he's more of a defensive-orientated guy. So I think the one concern they have right now is actually scoring offensively on the forward side. They're really young, got even younger since last season. And other than Stamkos, who has 5 goals, you have a lot of guys who haven't really, been able to, you know, to score as much as they did earlier last season. So I think that's their main concern right now. They won 2-1 in overtime against Calgary last night, scoring once in the last 2 minutes, and then in overtime there with Palat scoring. But one thing that they want to do right now is get better scoring opportunities and better chances at front.
Joe Smith is our guest here on the NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning. They'll be the visitors at MTS Center on Friday against the Jets. And Joe, you mentioned the youth that they have up front. You look at their third line, and I mean, you got an average age of about, you know, with doing some quick math, let's say 23 years old. Nikita Kucherov, you know, he's a second round pick in 2011. You got Vladislav Namestnikov, he's a first round pick in 2011. And you got JT Brown, who was a college free agent. You know, what are the Lightning hoping for from that, you know, unproven but apparently talented third line?
Well, they call them the Brownov line because that's easier to pronounce than the three names you just said. But they played really well together in AHL earlier last season, a lot of good chemistry. All of them have great speed, which you can see on the ice. And in the preseason, Vladdy and Kucherov had great chemistry. They racked up all the points, and that's why they made the team. They're looking just to have a little spark there. Kucherov can score. He's a natural goal scorer. Vladdy can really set him up from the center of what we're in, and then JT can go and retrieve the pucks in the corners. Not a big guy, but he can take on some bigger guys in the corners too. So they're not expecting them to score 25 goals in the season, but overall just to add in, you know, add a little offensive spark from that bottom line.
Joe, we got one last question for you here. I wanted to ask you about Brian Boyle because I really like the moves the Lightning made, acquiring Strawman and acquiring Jason Garrison, and especially Brian Boyle, who, as you know, played a big role for the New York Rangers last year. What's he brought to this team? And I guess maybe from the perspective of the players, how has he been received by the other players who have been on the Lightning for a few years?
Well, if you've ever seen him in person, he brings a lot of size. The guy's a towering individual. 6'7", but we've loved watching him so far. He's been great in the penalty kill, like a one-person penalty kill there for the most part. He did that really well in New York. Not going to give you a lot of points, although he did score the other night in Edmonton on a backhand shot. That was kind of a fluky goal, but a good character guy, a guy who's been in the league. He went to the playoffs, went deep in the playoffs last year with New York, and on a young team, up front especially, he's been a really good guy, along with Brendan Morrow, to kind of lead the way with those guys. So overall, he's been as good as advertised so far.
Joe Smith covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. He joins us here on NHL Midweek. Joe, thanks very much for doing this. We'll see you Friday at MTS Center.
Sounds great. Hope the weather's good.
Oh, it's supposed to be quite nice. Unseasonably warm, in fact.
Yeah, no snow on the ground, Joe.
Yeah, thank God. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. We'll see you Friday. Before we go to break, a reminder that in the course of what has been just a chaotic day in and around Canada, it's also Election Day. So if you still have 90 minutes to get to the polls, if you haven't yet voted, so we do encourage you to exercise your democratic right and go vote in the next 90 minutes. And then at 8 o'clock, tune to CTV Winnipeg. There will be a special election show from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. tonight on CTV Winnipeg. You can also catch it online, winnipeg.ctvnews.ca. And, of course, follow CTV Winnipeg on Twitter, at CTV Winnipeg. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Lightning and the Jets, and we are awaiting Prime Minister Stephen Harper. I believe that's going to happen about 6:45. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times for joining us. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus in the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, going back to the Jets-Lightning game coming up on Friday. It's game 4 out of 5 on a 5-game road trip for the Lightning. So far, 2-1. They won in Vancouver. They lost in Edmonton. And then they won last night in Calgary in a shootout or overtime?
I believe it was overtime.
Okay. I can't remember which one. 3-2-1 so far on the season. Still, you know, coming into this year, we sort of thought that they were one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. Anything that you've seen so far change your opinion on that?
Not really, Drew. I mean, the Eastern Conference isn't very good, first of all, but Tampa's a pretty well-oiled machine, and as you thought, things are going to go to the final. I think they're going to be pretty successful. I do have issues, as I mentioned in the last segment, to Joe Smith, the Tampa Bay Times, in terms of how they defend. I know scoring, he mentioned, is an issue, and I think that may be an issue. Down the road, I think that's probably something they can address. Not that they can't address the defense. I just think that the defense collectively leaves me concerned based on who I think they're going to go through. But you know what? It's a good team, Drew. They move the puck really well. They have a lot of skill. Maybe toughness could be something that they're lacking. O'Reilly Callahan's obviously a tough player. But some of the other guys are pretty small, not the most aggressive. And if they're aggressive like Brendan Morrow, they can't really skate anymore. So there are some things where this team's certainly beatable. But in the Western Conference, they'd be a second tier team. In the Eastern Conference, they're a top tier team. That's what it comes down to.
Ezzy, would you agree with the statement that on offense, the Lightning are top heavy? I mean, I know you're always going to be top heavy with Steven Stamkos, but then you look at, if you really look, deeper than the top two lines, the bottom two, there's not a ton there of proven talent at this point.
I disagree. I would say especially Drew. I could see what your point is, and we asked Joe Smith about Kucherov and Nemestikov and JT Brown, and you talk about the players that are out right now. So Alex Killorn, if he's in the lineup, then a guy like Brett Connolly, they have a lot of talent there. And are they as deep as maybe the Boston Bruins or the Chicago Blackhawks, LA Kings? No. Is this team necessarily better than the New York Rangers, the team, or the Montreal Canadiens, the teams that went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year on defense? I think they've gotten better. I think adding Anton Strålman and Jason Garrison has made them better. I don't necessarily know that they're in that same group as the Chicago Blackhawks and the LA Kings. They've gotten better. To me, when they didn't have Ben Bishop, that changed everything.
Sure.
Ben Bishop had a breakthrough season last year, and we know he had 35-plus wins, and he established himself as a number one goaltender, and then they had to go to Lindback. And Lindback couldn't get the job done. Nobody expected them to get swept by the Montreal Canadiens. Mm-hmm. I picked the Montreal Canadiens, but I didn't think it was going to be a sweep.
Same as the Habs in the Rangers without Price.
Exactly. Sure. It's a different team. And the injuries happen to everybody, but I look at this Tampa Bay Lightning team, and if it's not the Steven Stamkos line hurting you, it's going to be another line. And right now, Brian Boyle is playing on the fourth line, just like he did with the New York Rangers. I'll take Brian Boyle as my fourth line center any day of the week, guys. He's a good player that can do it all. He's got size. I agree with Richie. This is a team that I think will struggle against physical teams like the Philadelphia Flyers and the Boston Bruins, and that's why you got it Morrow. And Morrow at this point is probably in the last year of his career, second last year of his career, and he's probably not going to end up playing a full 82 games. But I think they got players like Strawman and Boyle because those guys are physical players. So I look at this team and it can hurt you on many three scoring lines, and even on that fourth line, you know, even though Callahan and Killorn are out of the lineup, this is a team that's not easy to beat. So, I mean, the Jets, again, you look at the specialty teams, penalty kill's been great, guys. And the power play needs to come through for them because the power play can change games. And against a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, you get into penalty trouble. And I wrote this in my game day setup for the game last night, Richie. Jets are the most penalized team in the NHL. It might have changed a little bit after last night. They didn't take as many penalties. But, you know, you're going back to the San Jose game when they took nine minors and all that. So the Jets got to stay out of the penalty box because especially with Jason Garrison now, the power play is better.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Jets actually match up pretty well against Tampa in terms of kind of a speed game without physicality. And I just think that, you know, they've were able to beat the Sharks last year. Similar kind of team, you know, a speed team, not that physical. And I think the Jets play those teams pretty well for the most part. So I see the Jets giving this a shot here. I mean, you're going to try and match up probably, you know, Truba, Stewart, or Enstrom, Bogosian against that Stamkos line. You're going to take your chances with, you know, with Phil Pula's line. And then those third and fourth lines, well, you know, there's some talent on there, more talent than some of the Jets' depth lines, but it's not something that's going to hurt you night in, night out. And with that Victor Hedman out on the back end, you can certainly take advantage of that with last change. So I mean, this is not a game that they can't win for sure. I mean, this is a game that the Jets, I think, a match isn't a bad matchup for the Jets.
And this is a game also, Richie, the Tampa Bay Lightning have scored the third most goals in the NHL so far. It's early, but they're going to be top five, at the very least top 10 in the NHL in goals scored this year. So it's not the type of game that you want to get into a shootout situation. You probably want to keep the game low scoring early. Sure, you want to get the lead, obviously. The Jets, obviously, as we know, have struggled once they get down. We saw that in the Calgary game, and we saw that in the California games. But you definitely don't want to get into a run-and-gun game, so you want to play a smart game. And even though the Carolina game, it wasn't without warts, I think that, you know, they played a much more structured game than they had in the past. So I agree with Richie. The Jets are still in this game, but the Tampa Bay Lightning, similar to the teams that are scoring a lot of goals these days, Richie, the Dallas Stars, Colorado Avalanche, they can score in bunches on you. So you don't want to let your guard down too much.
I mean, again, the Jets aren't exactly inspiring confidence, but I just think this team on the, you know, played a couple games in Alberta, I've had a few injuries. They're not going to grind you too physically. You've been at home for a while. You should be skating well. I expect the game to be close. And I certainly think some people may say, oh, the Lightning is a better team than the Jets, which the Lightning is. But I think the Jets will be all right tomorrow, I'll be honest with you. And I think stopping the Lightning, you know, starts with Steven Stamkos, but you know, you want to be able to keep the skill of guys like Drouin. And speed is, if you play a structured game with that speed, and the Jet, you know, you look at the Jets roster, you know, when Bufflin gets going, he can skate. Little lad, I mean, you look at Scheifele's improved his skating. This is a team that should be able to keep up, and so long as there's not huge errors, and some of the Jets guys are due as well, right? You know, for some points here. So I think it'll be a pretty close game. I think it'll be, you know, a 3-2 game. I'm even gonna say the Jets are gonna win 3-2 against the Lightning on Friday.
You got to book that. When Richie makes a prediction, you got to book it.
You just got to book it?
You just got to book it. Because Richie is not a prediction guy, really.
Yeah, I don't really like you making the predictions.
But you know, he's feeling it, so.
Yeah, and well, you know, the team, I think this, I mentioned in the first segment, the fans feed off the team, and I think the Lightning in town, Stamkos in town, and I think the team feeds off the fans. And, you know, it's certainly that relationship there. You know, it's the chicken or the egg, because sometimes the Jets come out flat, or the fan, all that stuff. But
what did come first, the chicken or the egg?
I'm not sure, but the fans
you
come
came from an egg.
The fans come before the team, so I guess, you know, we'll go on that basis. But with a Friday night game, a little bit more of a raucous crowd on a weekend, Steven Stamkos in town.
It's your birthday.
This is true. Also,
that's why they're celebrating. That's why they're raucous.
Steven Stamkos changes the vibe in the arena, 100%, because he's arguably the best player in the world. I think he's second best player in the world to Sidney Crosby, and the Jets will be amped up to play a good team, because it's hard to get up and play against the Carolina Hurricanes. Even if you're, you know, even if you're not a great team, playing against a really bad team is tough. So I expect a different performance. I didn't think Tuesday's performance was impressive. I didn't see Friday's or Sunday's, but Jets need to make some hay here, because they're going on the road and it ain't easy out there, especially on the East Coast against the teams and the trip that they're going to have in front of them.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek with The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. We are waiting Prime Minister Stephen Harper. He's scheduled to address the nation in a number of minutes, and as soon as he's going to do that, we will bring it to you live here on TSN 1290. Of course, terrible tragedy earlier today in Ottawa. Our hearts go out to everyone affected and the family of slain Army reservist Nathan Cirillo of Hamilton, Ontario, dies protecting the country, and just an extraordinary tragedy in Ottawa earlier today that the Prime Minister will address in a couple of minutes. We're going to, as we said off the start of the show, hockey is certainly secondary today to everything that's going on, but we're going to try and, you know, get your minds off of it for a little while we can. Minnesota Wild, they signed Charlie Coyle to a 5-year contract extension that just broke late this afternoon, probably about 5 o'clock or 5:30. 5 years, $16 million for Charlie Coyle. Your thoughts on that contract for the Minnesota Wild?
Well, I mean, you're Tampa Bay raying it here in terms of signing guys right off, you know, before they even get close to becoming free agents to long-term deals. That's what you're doing. And by that, you know, so just to explain that, you know, the Tampa Bay Rays in baseball did that with guys like Evan Longoria and different guys they signed long-term. You're paying for what you expect him to be, so you're getting value in that respect. He's just got to become that, right? I mean, if you look at the contract they got for Jonas Brodin, frankly, I think Jonas Brodin's far more established than Charlie Coyle. And I thought Brodin's contract was a bargain for the team, 4.1 a year. I thought that was a bargain for the team, even with arbitration years and RFA years in there. Coyle is the same situation. I mean, when you signed Charlie Coyle, he was going to be a pending RFA after this season. He's on his entry-level deal, meaning he has no arbitration rights. So you're signing him, Drew, you said 5 years, $16 million?
Yeah, 5 years, $16 million.
So you're buying out one UFA year, and you're getting an average cap hit of 3. What did you say? It was 3.2 million. That's, I mean, he's giving away more money for security. I think it's a bad contract for Charlie Coyle. If I was his agent, I wouldn't have signed that. I think Charlie Coyle is frankly showing a lack of confidence in his own game.
He had 30 points last year in 70 games, and that was his second NHL season.
He played center and wing. He was traded for Brent Burns. He was the key piece there. I mean, if there wasn't Granlund there, if there wasn't Koivu there, he'd have more of an opportunity, and maybe he feels like his stats will not be what he expects them to be because of the players on the roster ahead of him, Vanek, Pominville, all those guys who play, right? I mean, there's so much talent in Minnesota. So maybe that's it, but if I'm Charlie Coyle, I'm going to play hard this year, and maybe I have no arbitration. Maybe I sign a bridge deal, and I tear it up in terms of performance-wise, and I sign a bigger deal than what he signed there. I don't understand at all that contract from Charlie Coyle's perspective. Give credit where credit is due. Chuck Fletcher, to me, has signed two guys to below-market deals. Sure, he's a little bit of risk in terms of Charlie Coyle maybe not becoming the player you expect. Brodin, I feel like there's less risk. But in both situations, I feel like the agent has done a poor job for his player.
Charlie Coyle was acquired from the San Jose Sharks,
yeah,
along with Devin Setoguchi and Zach Phillips for Brent Burns. Yeah. So that's how he got. He was sort of the centerpiece of that deal from the Minnesota Wild's perspective.
Yeah. Setoguchi involved in that trade, too. I remember when that trade happened, because Remus and I were in St. Paul at the draft.
It was at
when
the
that
draft.
Happened.
That's exactly right.
Always remember that trade. But, you know, I guess Richie has a point. As far as the player and the player's agent is concerned, maybe you could probably get a better deal if you sign a bridge deal and you tear it up and you get more of a third-year salary. I guess that's maybe why the salary goes up. But I like Charlie Coyle as a player, and he's got the size. And Michael Russo, of course, broke the news that he signed the five-year deal, and they got the Arizona Coyotes coming to town on Friday, and Coyle's going to be lined up with Mikko Koivu. Richie, he's a guy that he's had success with, but he's also a guy that's been bumped off that second line because he hasn't performed. And, you know, Richie and I were talking about this off-air, and, you know, when we saw the contract, and you look at Charlie Coyle, and he made his debut during the lockout year, but he's only had one full year in the NHL. And part of that was playing on the second line. And he seems to have a lot of chemistry with Koivu. But at times, you know, when they brought in Pominville, he's been bumped to the third line. So right now, you're projecting him going forward as a 22-year-old. And you're saying, okay, this guy's going to play either center or wing, as you mentioned, Richie, going forward. And you project him to be in your top six. Because you're going to be paying him like a top six guy.
$3.2 million and $4.1 million. These guys might be terrible. And it's not going to hurt them. I mean, I realize that you're getting, you know, this is the thing. I mean, the NHL second contracts, a lot of guys are paying big money to these guys in their second contract. This is not big money for a second contract. And I don't know why Charlie Coyle signs this deal. I don't understand it at all. Makes no sense to me.
Well, and it's not like we haven't seen a lot of these deals, Richie. You're seeing Jake Muzzin sign a five-year deal. You're seeing Jonas Brodin sign a five-year deal. Sure, maybe you could say that the average value of those contracts, and because they're defensemen and they've proven that they can play with, I think those contracts are very similar in the sense that they're playing with two of the best defensemen in the league. Mm-hmm. They've shown that they work with Ryan Suter and Drew Doughty. But I know what you're saying. You look at PK Subban, you look at Ryan O'Reilly.
Why would you sign these
those
deals?
Bridge contracts worked out pretty well for them, right?
Why would you sign these deals? I don't understand it. I don't understand what his agent's doing.
I'm trying to see if I can find out who.
Unless you
don't
have confidence in your own game.
Well, I mean, that seems to be the only answer. Is that, you know, if you expect that you're going to develop as, you know, people had as people thought you were going to, why not sign a 2 or 3 year deal? You know, what's the rush to sign a 5 year deal besides, you know, the security that
why
it
would
provides?
You sign away? Sorry, interrupt you. Why would you sign away a UFA year? What's the incentive?
Well, right. You know, it's one thing to sign away your RFA years and you avoid arbitration and you avoid everything along those lines, but there's no reason otherwise. Remus informs me his agents are Glenn Giovannucci and Bob Norton.
Well, is that from Norton Sports?
It's bad. That's a bad job. I think that's Scott Norton is you're talking about. Yeah. But that's not a good job there. I mean, why
makes sense why
now?
The team signs it. The team signs it. You have the cost certainty. And also, I mean, I always think about this when these guys get locked up. I think it actually helps their trade value quite a bit.
I agree. And even if it's like Kyle Turris, even if he's terrible, I mean, you're still going to get he's such a salary is not prohibitive. I mean, you could trade it pretty easily. Exactly. It's under $3.5 million in 3 years when Charlie Coyle would have been in the sixth year of his, a pending RFA with arbitration rights. If he has a good year, he'd probably get $5 million. And what about years 7 and 8?
Sure.
Right there's $15 million.
There's a lot of money being left on the table.
I mean, and salaries are only going to increase with the cap going up.
I like Jake Muzzin's contract a lot better, Drew.
I don't know who's. Not a contract. I know it just came off the press. I mean, you surprised me with it, but...
Yeah, as he surprised me with it, too. I was in a meeting, and as he's like, can we add this to the show plan? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, hey, you know...
That's why you got you. You
news.
Keep us on our toes here.
Nobody follows Twitter like I do.
Brodin, too.
Well, we'll talk about... And speaking of Brodin, there's TJ Brody. We'll talk about his contract extension a little bit later.
Love
on.
Love TJ Brody.
In the show. I mean, you saw him. What
great
did you
D-man.
Think of TJ Brody?
I mentioned it on the midweek, and Richie was actually ahead of the curve on that when talking about him over a year ago. But he's a great defenseman. He does everything right, and he's not flashy. You're not going to see the end-to-end rushes necessarily like you'll see out of an Erik Karlsson or a PK Subban. But boy, him and Giordano, that's a legitimate number one pair. And I know the entire NHL world is talking about it now, but he was kind of like the best-kept secret. And the Flames look at him and they say, okay, he's in his early 20s. This is the second year that he's really shown us that he can play the big minutes, 25-plus minutes, with Giordano. Giordano's not old, and it's a good contract. I mean, you lock him up, and if you look at the average annual value, what he's getting versus some of the other defensemen in the NHL that are top defensemen, I think it's a pretty good deal. So Brody's a good defenseman, physical. He's got some offensive flair. He knows when to jump into the rush. I asked Bob Hartley about him, and Bob Hartley loves him. And you can tell his teammates love him. And that's the strength of that Flames team. They've got some good defensemen. I know Dennis Wiedemann might be a guy that they move. But, yeah, TJ Brody, he earned that money.
Want to talk about Brody later or now? I mean,
yeah, well, I'm sort of trying to gauge when we're going to see from the Prime Minister here. That's a little bit of the problem. You know, why don't we go to break and then we'll come back and the Prime Minister should hopefully be ready to speak to the nation at that point in time. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go, 1 hour for you left to vote in the 2014 Winnipeg Civic election. A reminder, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. tonight on CTV Winnipeg. Live election coverage. You can also stream it on live, winnipeg.ctvnews.ca.
This is the only show that, no matter what, will automatically play one Audio Slave and Velvet Revolver song.
Well, it's because Remus is behind the board. It's a guarantee. I think it's written in his contract. Actually, Remus, do you even have a contract? How quickly can we get rid of you if we need to?
So quickly.
Okay, thank God.
I've never signed anything.
Yeah,
that's not true, actually.
I'll tell you, your agent did a lousy job, like all these other agents.
I need an agent. Who wants to represent me?
I would, and Remus, I'll tell you this.
Oh, God.
We're never getting rid of you. If they get rid of you, I'm out the door with you, bro.
We'll give you all the free coffee for life and
sold!
Sold, yes.
We're awaiting Prime Minister Stephen Harper to address the nation about the events that unfolded earlier tonight, or earlier today, rather, in Ottawa. We'll bring that to you live as soon as it's going to begin. We're about 30 minutes or so behind on that already, so as you'd expect, it's a fluid situation, so I think everybody can be forgiven if they don't make their times exactly as they said. We are scheduled to be joined by Dave Jamieson, our colleague on TSN 1260 in Edmonton, going to join us to talk about the Oilers and their season so far. Obviously, their victory against Tampa has solved a lot of problems, at least temporarily.
That was a big win for them.
Before we talk about the depressing Oilers, I meant to mention the Leafs game on Friday night.
Yeah.
How much, I can ask you guys a question. Remus, you can get in here too.
How was the sushi?
Exactly. I had chicken fingers and fries. It was $14. I got three chicken fingers and four pieces of fries. How much do you guys think a large beer at the Leafs game was? And Drew, I talked to you about this already, so I don't want you to answer.
I finally was going to get a question right on this show.
No, Remus?
10 or 11 bucks.
Okay, Ezzy?
13.
$15.75.
No. Come on.
I took $15.75. I make less than that an hour.
I took a picture of it. That's pre-tax. I took a picture of it.
Come on.
Blew my mind. I'll read you.
That's the most I've ever seen anywhere.
It's, first of all, you said $10, Remus?
I said, yeah, $10.50.
It's $10 at MTS Center.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, for a premium.
It's not 10, is it?
It's $10 for a... I had a Rolling Rock last night, and it was $10 for a Rolling Rock.
I haven't been to too many games.
That's an import, Drew.
Okay. That's why it was $10 as opposed to $9.75.
Read you the prices. Large Drought.
Draft.
Drought?
Sorry, Draft.
They're pretty expensive, I remember, at MSG, too.
Large Draft, $15.75. A small draft, $11.75. Smirnoff Ice Cooler, $11.50. Collector Cup, so that's just Coke in a cup.
But it's a special cup.
A plastic cup that costs them 3 cents. $7.75. I mean, it gets better. Hold on. Okay?
How were the chicken fingers?
This segment brought
to you
by...
They were pretty average. Bagged candy, $6.25.
Is it like penny candy you used to get at 7-Eleven or something?
How much was popcorn?
$7.
Oh.
Like, can you believe the prices?
Yes. How much did you pay for your ticket?
I paid $145 for my ticket.
So now you feel, now you know what it's like to be robbed.
Yeah, it was an awful game, I tell you. The Leafs are terrible.
I have one thing to say about that. Somebody to my left is doing pretty well here.
What he's not telling you, as
I'll tell you this much. You just, the total of your evening, the ticket, the beer, the popcorn, that's how much I make in 2 months.
Well, I bought a beer. I bought a large beer, and I drank it for three periods.
Just to stretch it out because you couldn't afford another one?
I mean, $15.75 for a beer? This is grand larceny.
They should actually give beer away because it would make it a lot less painful to watch the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And you had to watch this game. The Leafs are awful. I don't care they beat the Islanders last night. This is a fundamental. We're going to talk about that in six things I learned this week. But the Leafs are not worth any price to pay to watch that team play. Some guy threw his jersey on the ice at the end of the game. That was the most entertaining part.
So, Richie, what you're saying is you're not drinking the Kool-Aid. And the Kool-Aid's probably $9.50.
Let's talk. We're still
$16
waiting.
$16 beers, Drew.
Let's talk about the TJ Brody contract extension. 5 years, $23.25 million extension, average annual value of $4.65 million for the Calgary Flames.
Fire his agent, too. I mean, I don't know why you're signing the contract. He's got 5 years accrued time, meaning he has 2 years left before he's a UFA. Two of those years are both arbitration years. Mm-hmm. If you're playing big minutes in the top pairing, in arbitration you're going to get at least $3-5 million, probably $4 million. Okay, if you hit the free agent wire as a mid-20s top pairing defenseman, even top four, and you can skate and move the puck, which TJ Brody can, you're gonna obliterate $5-6 million. His cap hit for 5 years is 4.65. again, great job by Brad Tre living here. I don't know who TJ Brody's agent is, and TJ Brody has a bigger sample size in terms of his productivity as compared to Charlie Coyle. So I don't understand this at all. Defensemen are at a premium. Defensemen who can move the puck, the game is built around those guys now. I don't understand what these agents are doing.
Let me ask you this. What's the rush to sign that contract? Never mind.
I agree with you, Drew.
Never mind a couple years early, too soon. But what's the rush to sign that contract after game number 6 of this season? Why not sign that? Why not wait till game 60? And see how your play is.
Why not just take your numbers, compare it to Zach Bogosian's, and ask why you're not getting that much money?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious as far as the rush for the team goes.
Anton Thun, former guest in the League
of
Hockey
Show.
Yeah,
I don't know what he's doing.
You look at the Calgary Flames, Richie, you mentioned Brad Tre Living, and for him, he's looking at this and he's saying, okay, TJ Brody, he's on a 6-game point streak. Let's lock him up now.
Well,
let's get for him it's obvious what the rush is. For the agent, not so much, because as we've said time and time again, post most recent CBA, I guess the current CBA is an easier way to say it. Mm-hmm. We've seen how the bridge deal works. PK Subban is the best example. So you look at that deal and you say, well, why couldn't a TJ Brody do that?
Well, Brody did a bridge deal. This is his third contract.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought this was his second contract it's his fourth year.
It's his fifth year.
So fourth full-time year.
Right, but the first year AHL counts as an entry-level year.
Okay, so there was a... Okay, so I apologize. No, okay. But I guess he could still sign another one.
Sure, 2 years to bring him to UFA. Of course, the team's going to say, no, we don't want to do that, and have you playing basically 1 year and then you're a UFA. But yeah, as a player, I'm saying, sure, pay me.
This is the first time that the player really has some leverage, and based on this contract, TJ Brody is giving away... maybe he's not giving away the leverage, but he's almost not even using it. He's just sort of abdicating it as something in his avail.
Talk about even baseline stats. 24 minutes a game last year. He's playing over 25 minutes a game this year. 31 yep. points in 81 games yep. on a team that was very bad last year,
yep.
but worked its butt off. Okay? So able to generate some shots, put up some points in power play, not a dynamic power play guy. All that. If he gets another year like this, and he's already got, 7 points, right? So if he does another year like that, or you assume better because he's getting a little older and he's getting a little more comfortable and certainly more confident in his game, he's already got 7 points in 8 games this year. Already got 7 power play points last year. He's already got 3. His contract in arbitration would be huge. Or it probably would be the cap it's going to be. Very possible.
Sure.
Because right now, I mean, you have to go based on what the contract is. Right now he's on a 2.125 cap hit. Okay? So you have to qualify him.
10% over that.
Yeah, I believe there's some kickers in terms of what I forget exactly the number that you don't have to qualify over 10%, but whatever it may be, I think you're right there, Drew.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from our radio colleagues in Edmonton from TSN 1260, Dave Jamieson. Dave, good evening. Thanks very much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Dave, got to start with, obviously brought you on to talk about the Oilers, off to a rough start to start the season. How much the big win against Tampa earlier this week, I believe Monday night, the win against Tampa, you know, how much did that sort of alleviate the pressure of what had been a horrific start?
I think it just delays it temporarily. Look, it was as inspiring as it was, and the Oilers are full measure for beating Steven Stamkos and the rest of the Tampa Lightning. Sometimes it's hard to remember that he does have a team around him. But, yeah, they played well. They were poised. Ben Scrivens turned in his second straight very solid performance in goal. The Oilers' best players, for them to have a chance on any given night, I say it too often on my show, but I'll say it again on yours because it sounds like it's new. Their best players have to be their best players without question every single night for them to have a chance to win. And by that, I mean Taylor Hall, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Jordan Eberle, Justin Schultz. And all of those guys contributed to a greater or lesser extent in the win over Tampa. And if it was a magic trick, they need to do it again tonight and then do it about 74 more times the rest of the way.
You know, Dave, you mentioned the best players needing to be the best players, and all of those players you mentioned, Taylor Hall and Justin Schultz, and you talk about Jordan Eberle and Neil Yakupov, they're all young players, and I know you've talked a lot about this in Edmonton, but when you look at this team and you know you're saying you're delaying the inevitable, and the Oilers obviously are going to be in tough to make the playoffs, but when you look at this team, you're already hearing a lot of trade rumors, and I know you've heard probably 5,000 trade rumors over the last few years, especially with a guy like Neil Yakupov, who's been a pretty big disappointment. But when you look at the season and what's to come, is it too early to start talking about trades, or does this team really have to do the best with what they've got right now?
Well, trade rumors are a cottage industry in Edmonton and have been for a bunch of years now, so it's never too early. And in fact, I think we've got the rumor machine operating at full capacity right now. I mean, it's, you know, on my show today, there was talk about, you know, let's get both Shen brothers and maybe a Shen to be named later in a deal. And you know, and on it goes. Look, yes, Neil Yakupov is probably not the, a fully evolved NHL player yet. He tantalized, obviously, in his first NHL season, which was the lockout shortened one. Last year, he got exposed for being really a one-dimensional player who, if he isn't scoring and isn't shooting, is not really contributing. And so that has everyone wondering if, in fact, he's got the ability to learn the other things that he needs to do. All of that said, Taylor Hall evolved last year from being a very, very good young player to being one of the NHL great players, regardless of age. So, he's already shown signs again early in this season that the Taylor Hall is the Oilers franchise. There are other good complementary pieces around him, but not unlike Stamkos or Alexander Ovechkin, who we're going to see tonight here in Edmonton. The Oilers are Taylor Hall, and he is going to have to carry this team on his back on many nights.
You know, Dave, some of the newcomers, and there were quite a many of them this offseason brought in by Craig McTavish, looks like, you know, a guy like Benoit Pouliot. Clearly, Charlie Coyle's agent didn't see the money that was thrown around at third and fourth line players this offseason. But how does a guy like Pouliot acquitted himself in Edmonton thus far?
He's been okay. I mean, I won't give him a shoulder shrug. I think he's been okay. And like a lot of the players the Oilers added over the offseason, they are depth players. They are not massive difference makers. I mean, Teddy Purcell has had a limited offensive output in the early going. But, you know, on many of the nights that the Oilers have played in the early going, they've been, you know, soundly defeated in all aspects of the game. Mm-hmm. Some games have not been, you know, overly flattering to the Oilers in terms of, you know, the effort's been there, but they've still lost. And in some, especially against the Los Angeles Kings, they got shown up for being a team that is much closer to the bottom than the top in the NHL.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 Radio in Edmonton, talking about the Oilers. Dave, you know, a lot of pressure put on the shoulders of Leon Draisaitl early on in his career, drafted third overall this year in Philadelphia. Too much too soon, or is he sort of beginning to come into his own and the game beginning to maybe slow down a little bit for him?
Oh, I think the game is it's going plenty fast for Leon Draisaitl, and that's probably the big question now in Edmonton. Probably even larger in people's minds than will the Oilers, when will they win their second game? This one revolves around when. This really revolves around, you got three more games with Leon Draisaitl. Do you keep him or does he go back? And the last game particularly showed that, you know, the game is faster than maybe he's ready for at this point. But in the absence of a viable option who isn't named Anton Lander, what do the Oilers have to go to, right? And that's the question, is they are now in a position where Leon Draisaitl is their, if not their only option, then darn close to it. So the next three games are going to be very telling. I'm not sure in three games if all of a sudden the NHL game, you know, makes sense to an 18-year-old. I think it's I'm of the opinion that more time is needed. But again, you know, losing franchises don't have time. And we can sit back and say, you know, that there is, you know, the Oilers should go slow. But there are a lot of people in this city, many of whom, you know, actually pay for their tickets, who think that we've had enough go slow. It's time to actually start winning. Now, the playoffs are unrealistic, but there needs to be, you know, trending in the right direction.
Dave, you know, more on this Leon Draisaitl issue. You look at, you talk about, you know, the game being fast for him and this team really not having a great chance of making the playoffs. And does Craig McTavish, I mean, if he doesn't have the guys to fill that spot or can acquire it via trade for a lower round draft pick just to be able to help development, you know, how does, as a fan, do you have confidence in management that they're looking out for the best interest of the squad? I mean, to me, it seems like you're just looking so short-sighted there as an organization, because you can't fill the spot and maybe even think he's not going to develop in junior as much as usual. But long-term, it doesn't seem like there's any value to keeping him around, especially with a losing hockey club.
Well, I think, you know, you've really, I think, you know, hit the nub of what the argument is about, you know, the Oilers' handling of this. And I think, you know, the drafting of Leon Draisaitl was the correct move. And I think, though, how he is handled both over these next three games and going forward, whether he stays or goes back, obviously, is the critical decision, is going to be a somewhat of a mandate on Craig McTavish's role as the general manager. I mean, he, in all fairness, and I think very highly of Craig McTavish, did as a player, did as a coach, and I think he'll do a great job, or will do a very good job with the Oilers if he's given the time. And that is something that is often in short supply, as we all know in sports, that people, you know, they'll start something and they're not around to see the fruits of their labor. So, you know, the constituents are split here. Keep him and let him learn on the job, learn on the fly. And then there are those who say, yeah, but you're keeping him in a losing environment where, and that's one of my concerns about these core Oiler players. They've never known, outside of whatever success they've had at the junior level, and many of them have represented Canada, they've only known losing. Taylor Hall only knows to be a loser. Jordan Eberle at the NHL level is a loser. That's, now their individual efforts are fine, but they don't know, and that's tough to get out of that environment. I mean, you know, ask any NHL team or any sports team that's been on the outside looking in for any length of time, and it's a hard thing to change.
Our guest on NHL Midweek is Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton, talking about the Oilers' slow start to the season.
Dave, I wanted to ask you about the defense pairings there, and obviously, they brought in Nikita Nikitin, and they brought in Mark Fain, who is a former New Jersey Devil. I was watching the Oilers on Monday night for that great victory that they had over the Tampa Bay Lightning, watching Martin Marincin and Mark Fain there on the bottom pairing. Really impressed with them. Yep. Just speak about the defense in general compared to last year, because obviously it didn't work out. Guys like Anton Belov just didn't work out for the Oilers.
No, well, you know, Fain and Marincin have, and certainly their work against Tampa, you have to look at that and come away going, okay, there's something there. You don't touch it. Marincin started the year down in Oklahoma City, and that was somewhat of a controversial decision. But he is back, and he is, and last year, you know, showed more than just a little bit of promise that he would be a very, very, you know, solid NHL defenseman. So, you know, what the Oilers may lack in flash, other than Justin Schultz on the back end, they're going to have to more than compensate with steady defensemen who make good decisions, who are not physically overwhelmed, and that was a problem for the Oilers, you know, over the last several years. And even Justin Schultz, as good as he can be and has shown in decent stretches, is that he, you know, it's the physical part of the game, right? He's an offensive defenseman, to be sure, but, you know, at some point you're going to find yourself working in front of your own goaltender, and that is not an area of strength for him. Now, you know, the red Jeff Petrie, you know, continues to kind of be the designated Oiler pinata for people to swing away at, and, you know, how is he still here? And he comes, his name comes up frequently in trade rumors. But, and Andrew Ferentz, who is the captain, and Ferentz is a, at this point in his career, is a serviceable NHL defenseman. He is not a, certainly an elite or marquee one, but again, They are, I mean, these guys are foot soldiers, and that's the lot of the Edmonton Oilers, you know, until they can start drafting stud defensemen. They have, you know, and that's another thing that people draw on is previous regimes here have gone for the flashy, sexy forward. And here, you know, here they are. They've got lots of flashy, sexy young forwards, no stud young, you know, defensemen. There are some coming, Darnell Nurse being the most notable, and Klefbom as well. But again, you know, it's, ask anybody how hard it is to grow your own when it comes to NHL defensemen. And so, you know, the cupboard, they're going to have to patch and fill with the Nikita Nikitins of the world.
And the concerning part, Dave, is when you talk about the forwards, there's some concerns. When you talk about the defense, there's some concerns. Then you move to goaltending, and there's some concerns. And we talk about it here in Winnipeg. You know, you go through the goaltending, defense, and forwards. If you got problems on every one of those levels, you got problems.
Yes.
Ben Scrivens, Victor Fast. Obviously, it is early, but the performance hasn't been great from either of those netminders. Is there panic already in Edmonton with respect to those two?
No, I think, you know, there's a significant number of people who fall into the category of anybody but Dubnyk. And when Dubnyk was traded last year to Nashville for Matt Hendricks, I don't think Oiler fans probably would have been comfortable with a recliner just between the pipes. They wouldn't really care if they had a goaltender, to be honest. They were just happy that it was not Dubnyk. Now, Scrivens, you know, he comes to town with a hometown guy, so there is, I'm not going to say he's getting the hometown, you know, bounce here. People would be critical if he can't stop the puck. But that said, the last two games, I think, fill people with a reasonable amount of confidence that Ben Scrivens, if the players around him, not just the defense, the offense, the forwards, buy into this concept of, look, we're really on most nights going to be out-talented. We all have to buy into, you know, whatever form of defense we want to call this, a collective effort, then we've got a decent chance. And if we can cut down on these really egregious turnovers in the slot area and, you know, five alarm opportunities for the opposition, then they've got a chance. Now, Victor Foss is injured, so it's Ben Scriven's show for as long as he can, you know, stay upright and uninjured until Foss gets back. But, you know, Ben Scrivens, I mean, this is going to be, with a homestand of seven games, I think this is game three, the Oilers have an opportunity to really kind of, if not run up a number of wins, which I think looks unlikely, but at least get themselves kind of established and steadied, because they're a fragile team.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned how, you know, the Oilers don't appear as though they're going to be a playoff team. It might already be a bit of a lost year in Edmonton. Does that give Dallas Eakins a little more job security for the rest of the season, or can you envision a scenario that he does lose his job in the next, you know, 75 games or so?
Look, I think the Oilers are quite committed. Certainly, Craig McTavish is. I say that knowing, of course, that, you know, sports can be a terrifically fickle business. But that said, I think if all parties are, you know, quite honest with themselves, they understand that this team is, you know, better than it was last year, still not very good, and it does reside in the toughest division in hockey. And so any gains the Oilers make, they may be very, very small. Chances are the Anaheim Ducks, the LA Kings, the San Jose Sharks, even the Vancouver Canucks, and yes, the Calgary Flames, they too are improving. And so it's a, long, hard road for this franchise. And this year, you know, I think they've had so many coaches, so many changes over the last several years that, if anything, the Oiler organization, Daryl Cates, the owner, Craig McTavish, the GM, Kevin Lowe, is still involved in hockey operations, have to realize, and probably do realize, that as bad as this is and could even get worse, they would be better served to at least see out the season with Dallas Eakins. Now, if things really go sideways, I'm of the belief that one of the best coaches the Oilers could find, and he's right in-house in Craig McTavish, but I'm not sure that anyone wants to wear two hats in this day and age.
Maybe he pulls a Daryl Sutter, goes back behind the bench, and leaves the GM job to somebody else.
Kevin Lowe for GM again.
Okay. Good job, Dave. Really interesting stuff.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Dave Jamieson works for TSN 1260 in Edmonton, our TSN radio affiliate there. Dave, thanks very much for that. Really appreciate the insight into the Oilers.
Thanks, guys.
We'll talk to you soon. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 Radio in Edmonton. Great insight into the Oilers.
It might be a tough season there in Edmonton.
hang on. What year is that comment coming from?
Well, you know, it might be a tough year, but they're getting a new arena in 2016. So, and, you know, there's a lot of young players there. So, you know, keep your heads up there in Edmonton.
Yeah. Want to move on to six things we learned this week, where normally we'd have audio, you know, fancy audio right now. But, you know, again, Remus, what do we employ you for?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly what I figured.
We didn't have it last week either.
Oh, well, I wasn't here last week.
Yeah.
So it's okay.
Next week, guys. Next week.
Yeah, we'll see if we can really get you to remind you a few different times there. Richie, you wanted to start talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs and their poor fundamentals. You saw them in person on Friday night.
Well, I mean, that's a bad team. Oh, man, they can't even make a breakout pass. And that's the thing about some of these teams. You talk about Andy Carlisle, you talk about, you know, the way they're put together. And, you know, it's this reason, that reason, and you read a ton about the Maple Leafs. But at the end of the day, Drew, it comes down to one thing and one thing only. Well, not one thing only, but it comes down to one main thing for me. And that's fundamentals. Can you make a breakout pass? Can you support the puck? Can you make the simple play? And the Toronto Maple Leafs can't do any of those things on a consistent basis. So you can talk all you want about the stats, and you can talk all you want about different things and the coaching problem, and I know, you know, certainly these aren't all mutually exclusive, but at the end of the day, this team has no cohesiveness. This team fundamentally is an awful team. They make stupid mistakes. They make selfish plays, and there's nothing to inspire confidence of this squad. And I know they hired Mark Hunter, and they're trying to change, you know, they're trying to spend a lot of money outside of the, you know, the cap system. They can spend as much as they want on their management, and I think that's a good idea so long as you don't have too many cooks in the kitchen, which has been a concern in some organizations. But I think they're on the right track that front. But they got a lot of work to do. You watch this team. There's a lot of work to do.
Ezzy, this harkens back to our last segment with Dave Jamieson. You think the Edmonton Oilers should continue using Martin Marincin on defense, as Darnell Nurse is still a few years away from being an everyday player in the NHL.
Well, I know Richie's going to give me a hard time because I like to ask the guest before I talk about it just so he can validate my point.
That's good.
But, you know, I was watching this game, Edmonton against Tampa Bay, and Martin Marincin, he's played in a couple games now for the Edmonton Oilers. This is a guy, as Dave mentioned, it was a little bit controversial to send him back down. But I look at him, and he's a big guy. He's only 22 years old. He's only played a little bit in the AHL, guys, now. And he's played a little bit for the Edmonton Oilers. Going back to last year, he got into 44 games. But Martin Marincin's a guy, he's got the size, he can skate, he can move the puck. And I think Darnell Nurse, as we know, is still young, 19 years old, and he can't move the puck. And I know that they're talking about moving Jeff Petrie. I think Martin Marincin's a good defenseman. And I know, you know, he's not the flashiest guy, but he's solid, can move the puck, he's got the size. So I'd like to see, I'm going to be watching him because I think he's a good defenseman there. And I think they should go with him as opposed to some younger options.
The second thing I learned this week, well, actually, and I learned another thing from Ezzy, so this would be the third thing I've learned this week, but the second thing I'm bringing to the
table.
Just
call me the professor.
Is, and I want to go back to what we were talking about earlier in the show. What are these agents doing? I mean, the agents are jumping the gun here, and it's as if they don't understand the idea of leverage, the idea of market value, the concept of the cap going up, even if it's not supposed to go up as much as people think. Betting on the player, arbitration system. I don't know what these guys are doing. Anton Sen is a veteran general manager. I think he made a...
Agent.
Excuse me, agent. I think he made a foolish decision. But the agents that you'd mentioned for Charlie Coyle, well, I don't know either of them. I haven't heard of either of them. I certainly don't know them personally. Again, I think foolish decision. You have to wonder, you know, who's giving advice and why are these guys making these decisions? And I'm not saying you have to hold for the most amount of money all the time. I understand that. You know, sometimes you like the security, but you can still get security. In these instances, you can still get security.
Yeah.
And with a reasonable level and not compromise, you know, what you can make in the future to that large of a degree. I mean, like Jonas Brodin, guys, could become a top two defender playing 20 to 25 minutes a night. And in free agency, TJ Brody in free agency is going to, I said before, you know, 5-6 mil probably.
Well, Zach Bogosian makes $5.1 million a year.
Just a comparable process. So, like, I mean, I don't understand why TJ Brody's guy, agent's not going to look at Bogosian and say, I don't want anything less than that. Right? And Bogosian signed off a bridge deal. What did Brody sign off of? A bridge deal.
Sure.
I could go on and on about that, but that's my second point.
Ezra, decision by Penguins head coach Mike Johnston to use Evgeny Malkin on the right wing will provide long-term benefits even if he eventually returns to playing center. We're watching the Penguins and the Flyers game here on TV. The Penguins wearing their throwback jerseys here.
Yep, and we're going to play the national anthem in the last segment. Right. You know, we knew beginning before the year started, guys, that Mike Johnston wanted to go with pairs. So you're talking Sidney Crosby and Chris Kunitz and possibly Patrick Hornquist and Malkin. But it actually turns out that they've moved Hornquist up to the top line and bumped Dupuis to the second line. But the reason why I think this is good is because the main reason why the Pittsburgh Penguins did this is to get Malkin shooting more. And that was a big problem last year. Malkin was not shooting the puck enough. If you go back to 2011-2012, when he had the 109-point season, he had 339 shots. You go back last year, granted he only played 60 games, he had 191 shots. So I like the idea of getting him to play more. By the way, I think that Malkin does later on in the season go back to center. But I like the idea of playing him on the right wing now because I think Brandon Sutter, you have concerns maybe that he's not a good enough playmaker. Malkin likes to have the puck on his stick so that he'll get more shots, and it's worked out so far. He's got 7 points here. But I do think the idea of getting him more involved in the play and getting him more shots is a good idea, even though he'll probably end up going back to center.
Didn't you have 339 shots last month?
That's true. Of Jägermeister.
What's he going to have on your birthday on Friday?
Be some drinks flowing.
To be determined.
Exactly. Richard, reputations are generally hard to shake, I presume you mean, but Bob Hartley has obliterated any notion that he can't coach young players with the work he's done in Calgary.
Isn't that really amazing? I mean, he's the kind of, he reminds me of Villain Vigneault in the way that, you know, Mike Gillis came in there, it wasn't his guy. Mm-hmm. And Bob Hartley's coaching there, he's Jay Feaster's guy, Brian Burke comes in. So Vigneault is not Gillis's guy, and Hartley's not Burke's guy. And both guys really carved, you know, Vigneault certainly did a nice niche for himself for a long time in Vancouver. And Hartley's doing it here. And he's doing it with a young team. And all you heard about Bob Hartley in Atlanta, especially, and in Colorado, is he can't coach young guys. He doesn't lean on young guys. He's tough on the young players. He trusts the veterans too much. That team's all young. And look at the progression of TJ Brody. Look at the progression, even early, but Johnny Gaudreau.
Sure.
You look at, you know, Sean Monahan. It was a tough start here, but Sean Monahan as a rookie last year. The young plays, Michael Backlund developing well, kind of, you know, maybe not the expectations level are lower for him now, but playing well. What a nice job he's done there. That team busts their butt every night.
Yeah.
And I wasn't at Sunday's game, but I apparently
they
worked
it was, hard.
They it was the
hard.
Same thing.
They always work hard.
Look at the points they already have now. And you look at the skill team in Edmonton. I was thinking that when the interview with Dave Jamieson last segment. All the skill you talk about Edmonton. How Calgary was basically doing what the Jets are doing right now, which is just in the middle of no man's land. But look how Calgary's turned it around. Coaching, some nice draft picks with Bennett and Monahan. It's a testament to Bob Hartley and the organization there, but I'm very impressed. I think it's early, obviously, but certainly early coach of the year candidate.
Yeah, very early.
Well, it's a good point, Richie, and the thing is you can make a strong argument, even though it's early. The way that the Flames have started off, Hartley's in the last year of his contract. We know that he's not Brad Treliving or Brian Burke's guy. He's Jay Feaster's guy. But he's making a good argument here. I agree with you. I think he's a great coach.
He's getting a job for himself. If he doesn't get picked up there, he's getting a job for himself elsewhere.
Sure. Ezzy, to wrap it up, Antti Raanta of the Chicago Blackhawks is an ideal backup NHL goaltender.
This is why I think Antti Raanta is a fantastic backup goaltender. And, you know, he got the win last night against the Philadelphia Flyers. They shut out the Philadelphia Flyers 4-0. Philly, of course, is playing again tonight. But Antti Raanta, last year he played 25 games for the Chicago Blackhawks. The reason why I think he's the perfect backup goaltender, not just because of the way he's talked about in Chicago, is because he knows his role. And if you talk to Jamie McLennan or other guys that have really made a career for themselves as backup goaltenders, they knew their role. And Antti Raanta is a very good goaltender, underrated goaltender, not just the shutout that he got yesterday, but if you look at the way he played for the Chicago Blackhawks last year, even when Corey Crawford had minor injury problems. But to me, he's perfect. There's no issue there who's going to be the number one goaltender, second 1B, 1A, even though it's good to have a 1B and 1A goaltender in certain situations, if you're the St. Louis Blues, for example, and Brian Elliott has struggled with confidence. But to me, Antti Raanta is a perfect guy, and if you talk to anybody and read what they say about Antti Raanta, he's a guy that they really like in the dressing room. So I think if you look at the kind of the issues they've had, guys, with backup goaltenders in previous years, with Ray Emery and the Nikolai Habibulin was at the end of his career, I think he's perfect for them. They know that as the season progresses, they're not going to have any problems in between the pipes.
Those are the six things we learned this week. Let's head to break. When we come back, we got one final segment. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment of NHL Midweek this Wednesday here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, where I'm pleased to report the renovations are coming along swimmingly, and they are all set to reopen at the beginning of November. For tickets, for showtimes, for a list of comedians that are upcoming, check them out online, rumorscomedyclub.com, and do not forget that the 30th anniversary celebration, November 14th and 15th at Rumors. Tickets are going quite quickly. Be sure to get them, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Do we have a new mayor yet?
Not yet, but you still have 8 minutes left in which you can go and vote. And then right after we're done here, and at 8 p.m., turn to CTV Winnipeg. And that's, you can watch the special election broadcast from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., where they will be bringing election coverage about the new mayor, the city council races.
Is Kevin O going to be on that show?
I think he's there modeling his shoes. I'm not sure, though. Hmm. He's got good shoes, Kevin O. He's got some real good shoes. You can also check it out online, winnipeg.ctvnews.ca. You can also follow them on Twitter, at @CTVWinnipeg.
Kevin Ho. I mean, Kevin O, I must say.
Wow, I can't.
Sorry. Kevin O is a very... He's going to give me a hard time for that one.
Oh, man.
Kevin O, I must say...
If he doesn't, we're going
there's
to.
There's a lot of handsome guys up there in the press box in the Winnipeg sports media, but he takes the cake.
So my dad... My parents were at the game last night.
Your dad called me.
Yeah. He was...
I didn't know. I didn't see it and ignore it. I just saw it after the fact.
No, you can ignore it.
Do you have a texting relationship with Sheldon?
I might after last night.
So he called me, or he texted me, and he's like, get the guys to wave from the press box so I can see them. I'm like, Dad, they're working. And first of all, you can see Ezzy from everywhere in the arena that faces the press box. I'm like, look for Ezzy, the guy who's got the thickest beard. You know, the only guy who's really got a beard up there.
That beautiful pink tie I was wearing.
Oh, your shirt was, I could see it from the 300s, well away from it. Clearly, you can spot Ezzy. I told him exactly where you're sitting, you know, above the word passion that's painted on the press box. So I'm like, Dad, I'm not sure why you needed to follow up with a phone call as they're working during the course of the game. I understand it was a bit of a dull game, but, you know, maybe let it be. Call Richard after on your own time.
Sheldon's the best.
Yeah.
Nobody's better than Sheldon.
Want to give a little bit of a preview for Saturday. Saturday Spotlight coming up this Saturday. Mm-hmm. Andy Murray, former NHL head coach, former Team Canada head coach, current head coach of the Western Michigan Broncos in the NCAA. He joins us on Saturday Spotlight coming up Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 12 noon on TSN 1290, of course, 12 noon to 3 p.m. Also, Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com, mm-hmm, talk about the Colorado Avalanche ahead of the game on Sunday afternoon.
A couple interesting ones. It's Sunday afternoon, a 2 o'clock game on Sunday.
Yeah.
I actually like that. And I think it cuts
into my NFL time. I'm not crazy about
it. I like it. I know it's usually not expected to be this nice out at this time of year, but yeah. Sunday afternoon, I like Maybe you say 2 o'clock's too early. I like that's not 7 o'clock on a Sunday.
I agree with that.
So any time between 2 and 4, I'm happy with. 2, I'll take. I think that's a good adjustment.
Yeah, there's an 8 o'clock game on a Sunday night coming up, and it's just ridiculous.
The new TV deal is kind of, even the game I went to in Toronto on Friday was a 7:30 game, which is usually a 7 o'clock start because of TV purposes.
Yeah. It would be at this point in time, typically, where I would give a big thank you to all our guests. And, of course, I do thank our guests. And I give a big whole spiel about how to follow us on Twitter and everything else.
You give a good spiel?
I do give a good spiel. We figured we'd end the show this way instead. Here is the playing of O Canada from the Pittsburgh Penguins game versus the Philadelphia Flyers earlier tonight. Not normally would they play O Canada. Here's the game. We'll see you Saturday. Thanks for listening to NHL Midweek.
Please rise and remove your hats. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight our thoughts and prayers are with our friends in Ottawa and across Canada. Please join us in singing of O Canada.
Right. O Canada, our home and native land, true patriot love, in all thy sons command, with glowing hearts we see thee rise, the true north, strong and free. From far and wide, O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. God keep our land glorious and free.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.